This is the Tales from Davidstown podcast, delving into the behind the scenes of the audio series, graphic novel, and more, as well as speaking with the actors, writers, producers, and other creatives that bring the Davidstown world to life. This full-length episode for our Patreon residents was recorded on the 25th, June 2024 in York, England.
Hi everyone, welcome to the first episode of the Tales from Davidstown podcast. This is our pilot episode. I'm your host, Luella, and I'm very excited to be talking all things Tales from Davidstown with you guys and with our special guests that we're going to be having on the series. Starting with, today, our very own Julia Munder, who is our executive producer on Tales from Davidstown. Hi, Jules.
Hi.
How are you doing this morning?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. This is super exciting. Studio's yes. coming along. We're
this.
Doing it. Yeah.
This is stunning.
Well Absolutely.
Yes, we've got a plant here.
It's still a work in progress. There's still some changes I'd like to make. Okay. But we're getting there. We're working it out.
Well, Jules is a perfectionist in the best way, which is why we have her around. And yeah, as you said, we're working it out as we go.
That's indie production That's indie all over, production. Isn't it?
Yes. So we're going to be talking to you today about your involvement from your production side of Tales from Davidstown. So as an executive producer, this fascinates me because this is completely different to the sort of things that I do. So I'm always so interested in how people produce things because, as you said, this is an indie production, which means people are wearing a lot of hats. There's a lot of work that goes into it and a lot of passion, which is what makes it great as well. So as executive producer, let's start with how did Tales from Davidstown come to be?
The idea came about from a random conversation I had with our director, Cal, and where we're going, how our slate's looking, what films we want to develop, what projects we want to develop. And we always wanted to make a werewolf movie. We love An American Werewolf in London. Rick Baker's creature is amazing. And we love that you can see it. But to actually pull off a really good creature or any monster movie, the production value needs to be up there. It needs to be high.
Yes.
Because if it doesn't look just so, it takes people out of it. And we didn't want that. So we were playing with the idea how we could raise a significant budget for that, or how we could even start. But we had this idea for a supernatural film way back in the day. But there were so many ideas that we did want to play with. And then Cal just came out and said, what if we just do an audio series? And I was like...
And was that film that you wanted to make way back when, was that a werewolf film?
That was based on a supernatural film with different creatures, vampires, witches, and werewolves.
Just kind of when you go creatures in horror, it was just all of the above.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So no monsters, but the supernatural creatures.
The supernatural creatures. Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yes. And then we worked. Yeah. We thought, okay, we're doing an audio series. Mm-hmm. Why not try it? So that's when we recorded the first episode, which is the pilot. And that's how it all started.
So by creating an audio drama series, you could still bring that vision to life, but being able to work within the budget that you were starting with and not setting yourself this like really difficult task. Let's not say impossible task, because I think that indie production manages to achieve a lot of the impossible anyway. But of setting yourself that challenge to create werewolves on screen to the standard that you would want to be creating it at.
Yes, so there's always budget constraints. It's also time constraints. How do you get the project off the ground? How do you prove that there is an audience? This is the other thing. To raise budget, you need to prove there's an audience, there's an interest. And one hand side is the data. So we work a lot with audience data. We can see there's an interest in a certain genre, which there is still in werewolves and supernatural. It's still massive. And there's obviously still an audience that is interested in. But proving that to an investor can be quite difficult. And we wanted to get these creative juices flowing. We wanted to create something. So we were like, what's possible and where can we start? And that's how the audio series came about. Obviously, we picked the most visual genre to go into audio with, which is constantly a challenge. But I think we're doing quite well, and especially the sound design team is doing a brilliant job. Script writers, like, these are all the considerations you have to make because you can't see it.
Well, yes. Yeah, so of course that this means that then, you know, you've looked at this idea and you've been able to prove that yes, there's an audience for this, and there's demand for it. But then when it comes to assembling a team of creatives who are going to bring that vision to life in all the different facets that you've just mentioned, sound, you know, the acting side, the script writing side, how did you go about assembling these people that you needed, this team, this creative team, to bring Tales from Davidstown to life?
Yeah, so with our core team, me and Cal have worked together for the last 7 years now, so we know how we work pretty well. And then the core people around it, we've got some new people that we've cast or we've heard from other creatives that we should work with them. But then other people, like some of our actors, we've worked with them before. So, you know, there's a certain reliability as well, because there is practical elements to this as well. Of course, you want the creativity. Mm-hmm. But then if your actor doesn't turn up on the day, that throws out your plan, that throws out your budget. So there's certain things. So it's a mix of new talent, and old talent that we've worked with, also new creatives, like people who just came out of acting school or film school, and then people like Michaela or Johnny Vyavash who've done this and who are known in the genre for ages now or for a few years. Mm-hmm. So bringing that together and having new people with very experienced working together, I think that brings that creative energy. And
yes, it brings a new energy to your project, but it also means that you're working with people who you also rely on.
Definitely.
That building relationships is important, especially in our industry.
Absolutely, yeah.
When we're making these kinds of things, films, audio drama, whatever it is. So, yeah, so you've worked with some people that you've built a relationship with already to bring that to life.
Yes, awesome. Yeah, and bringing new people in, bringing a more diverse creative team and cast is also important to us. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in audio drama as well, something that I'm noticing too is when it comes to the cast and the voices in that drama, there's quite a diverse range of voices in Tales from Davidstown, which makes it very exciting to listen to and very engaging to listen to. That's the word I'm looking for, very engaging. So was that a consideration for you as well when you were casting it? So you've got like Jess and Emily. Those two characters, for example, are very integral to the story. Yes. So their voices must have been a very important consideration.
Yes, and at first we actually tried to have everyone speak in RP and not make it a local drama. So that was the idea first. But then when we were working with the actors, and from my own background, because I trained as a TV journalist back in Germany, and we had elocution lessons and you had to speak proper high standard German. Which
is like speaking RP in this country.
Yeah, speaking RP in this country. Yeah. But there was... It takes out some of the character, because you're acting out a voice, you're putting on a voice. Yeah. And yes, it is acting, but actually bringing your natural accent to the play and working with that and creating that world, because Davidstown is a quaint little village in the north. So why not bring that diversity in the voices as well?
Yeah, and it's great to have that representation of different parts of the UK.
Yes.
And if there are fans, which there will be across the world, because this can be accessed from anywhere, which is what's so great about the platform that you've got it on, it's great to introduce these localities to the world. And I do think that sort of local feel is great. And because then people know that this is a series created in York, by a company based in Yorkshire, I think it's really nice to have those local accents. But then I've noticed that you know, the other cast that you've brought in, the accents are a mixture too. But like I said earlier, I think that creates like a really engaging mix.
Definitely, and also the cultural diversity, like
Fen
Fen bringing her Chinese background to the story and creating Mei Ling as a character adds such a richness to it.
It does, yes.
So we're not just hitting a local audience, but also an international audience and opening it up this way. And we've got a big American audience, so I'm guessing at some point there will be an American character turning up as well.
Yes, I think that's a great idea. So we've been talking about assembling a creative team, the inspiration behind these characters, and how the cast came to life. What really drew you to the project? You talked a little bit about how you've always been a fan of the supernatural genre. And finding out whether something like this is going to have an audience.
Yeah.
So what drew you to it, and why did you think it would resonate with an audience?
I had the audience data, so I knew there was... There's still the cult classic in American Werewolf in London, I've mentioned it. Mm-hmm. We've got shows that have been running forever, like Buffy.
Yes.
Kids are watching, re-watching Buffy. I've watched it when I was about 14.
I'm watching Buffy for the first time right now. Not literally the second, obviously.
Then newer shows like Teen Wolf, True Blood, big fan of True Blood.
Yes.
BBC's just done a new version of Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, yeah.
So the genre is coming back. Mm-hmm. It's never gone. But it is coming back. It's trending again.
There's a resurgence in the popularity of it.
Yes. And also, if you create a show like Davidstown, which is a lot of work, and you need to keep at it, so it's not just a project that you do for 4 weeks and you develop it for 2 years and then you market it for a year, like a film, so there's a span, but this is going on now, has been going on now for the last year, and hopefully will be going on for a lot longer. So you need to really like what you do. And we love those kinds of stories, so we want to tell them. There's an audience there, and also I love a good challenge. Mm-hmm. And taking that genre that is so visual and making it into audience is into an audio is definitely a challenge.
How do you overcome the challenge of making this incredibly visual story effective via audio?
So there's a lot of creatives behind it. It starts with the script. When we develop the scripts, you go throughout the whole writing process like it is a film. But actually, when we go through it and we go into script editing, then we have these considerations. Okay, you can't see that she's transforming. You can't see that certain things are happening. People don't see the world. So it's picking out these points in the script and seeing how can we visualize it through the audio with text. Also, what clues can we give the actors in the directing to emote more? Because you can't see faces.
No, yeah.
So all emotions need to come through the voice. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the directing, Cal needs to be much more listening into, is the voice emotive? Is the actor not, because there's no faces, obviously we see them. What's the voice telling you? And then with the editing, obviously the sound design team has a lot of work. I think the last episode, it was 187 sound files. So that's a lot of sound files to layer to get this big end scene going. I'm not spoiling it for anyone who hasn't heard it, but there's a lot going on. So layering it on top of it, they're doing a brilliant job. And then we've got the comic or the graphic novel. I like to call it graphic novel.
Yeah.
And that is visualizing.
So that's a pretty exciting development for the show as well. And from talking about these, bringing these visuals to life through sound, having a comic book gives you the visuals to follow along with the audio, which I think is a genius idea. So how did that come to be? And what are the plans for the future of that part of the project?
So I think it was halfway through the season one of the audio play, we started developing a so-called IP map, an intellectual property map.
Okay.
So we were thinking...
These are the sort of like business terms that I hear a lot when I'm at the studio and I don't know what any of it means. Thank you for clarifying.
So your IP, your intellectual property, is the story.
Yes.
And then it's the forms the story comes in.
Okay.
So part of this... we've got plans. There is the live action film, we'll talk about this a bit later. There is a video game that might be potentially coming. There's the chatbots we've been playing around with. There's the comic book. And all of this ties into our wider plans for developing the world of Davidstown. and a comic book was something that we thought was a natural next step.
Yeah.
And it was quite achievable and doable. Because again, as an executive producer, I'm also responsible for financing.
Yes.
So how can we make this work and how can we keep this going for the fans? Because no one wants to do a live action and then you never hear from us again because we've run out of money. That's not the idea.
No, and that's not what you guys want
no,
either.
No, that's not what we want either. So this is growing organically and it's growing nicely organically thanks to all our supporters, which is amazing that we are allowed to do this because so many people are supporting us
you guys
and loving the show.
You guys have, you're building a really great fan base online and through Patreon. So how does this fan base that you have, how are they affecting the production of this series?
So we love getting the feedback and building the community, and through that we get a lot of ideas about what fans mention, what films they are fans of, what transformations they like, what characters they like. Then we're also doing polls, so they can influence certain plot points.
Yeah. It's like a choose your own narrative.
Yes.
Yeah. So they get to be very involved in where these characters go in their story.
Yes, and that feedback's great.
Yeah.
Because we want to create something that people like and that people want to watch.
Mm.
Because although we are fans of the genre and we love what we do, it's finding this audience and...
Yes, I mean, that's where your role comes into things, where you've got a great eye for the creative as well as being a producer. But as the producer, right, you're, like you said, you're very involved in financing the project and making those business and marketing decisions to make sure that you can keep making it.
Yeah.
So that all the creatives can still keep doing their jobs and the fans can keep enjoying the series. But for you, it's figuring out, well, what other ways can we connect with the fan base and grow the series, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's, I love enabling the team to do what they do best. Like, I read the scripts, I am involved in the creative process, but what those guys do, I could never do. That I'm in awe about that. It's absolutely great. It brings me massive joy to see that and see it coming to life. And then with the fans getting that feedback, obviously, it's like every artist, it's like the applause. You want that feedback, you want to get that praise.
Oh yeah, of course.
Or you want to get constructive feedback. If you don't like it, tell us why you didn't like it and we'll take that on board and take it away as well. And if we can change it and it makes sense to change it, we will.
With the graphic novel,
you
said you came up with that idea when you were halfway through creating season one.
Yes, we were recording
about that.
Season one, and then thought, okay, how can we grow this world? Clearly there's an interest there. And we found some talented comic artists. We're working with free comic artists now all over the world. They all have different styles. So see, in terms of a classical development process, you would have one style and run with it.
Yeah.
But again, we want to present different styles to our audience, to the fans, or the residents, to our residents.
To our residents.
Yeah. And have them decide what they like best. There's again practical elements, how reliable are people, how much time do people have, how quick is the working process, because it's got a lot of work goes into creating a comic, like from the initial paneling out to sketching to coloring. I had no idea before we started that how much work is actually involved.
I suppose that must happen a lot in your job, because you're sort of investigating all these different facets of the genre, and so you're learning as well, but how you can make that happen, reaching out to people that work across the world and then finding out the time scale and everything that goes into it. And do you feel like the comic book is on is that kind of something that you've settled into your process on that now?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And it's if this audience grows and it becomes more commercial, it's working out what style do we want to run with.
Yeah.
But that will depend on...
So you're still experimenting with that at this stage? You're still...
Yes, so you will have seen the residents have received issue 1, issue 2 of the comic. Issue 3 is currently ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
But even those styles are very different. And issue 4 will be a completely different style. I can't say about it too much.
Yes.
You shouldn't have favourites, but season 4 is one... issue 4 is one to look out for.
Okay. Okay, I'm very excited about that. Another part of this process that you touched on just now, when it came to the things that the fans can get involved with, is another super interesting thing that I was actually chatting with Cal about yesterday, is the AI chatbot. So, for example, the Jess Wilder AI chatbot, that's such an interesting idea. How did that come about?
We love experimenting with AI.
Yes.
I find it fascinating coming, because my business background is in SEO. Just to, before I answer this question, yeah. So none of the story, none of the images, none of the comics, nothing is created with AI.
Absolutely.
We yes. only use AI to enhance the audience experience and the community building.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. purely the AI chatbots. And that came about because the world of AI fascinates me. I've got a background in digital marketing. Obviously, it's a hot topic there as well. And we just wanted to experiment with it. So again, it was one of those things where we explored AI and seeing what's possible. Obviously, in our industry of AI video and everything coming in, we have to stay current and see how fast is this moving and how fast do we adapt and how do we need to adapt our processes, if at all. And it was one of those things where we were going through this rabbit hole of new AI developments, and actually Cal and the team found it and said, actually, there's this AI model we can train, and people can have their own adventures with those characters.
And as an audience, I think it's a very relatable thing to sort of wish that you could speak to the characters of the show that you're a fan of. I mean, imagine if you could chat to Buffy about something if you were a Buffy fan, right? But that's not realistic. We can't have Danny and Michaela having conversations with people. That's not realistic. But the idea of them being able to talk to those characters, like you say, and join them kind of in the stories is really fun for them. I'm sure that must be like a really fun thing to be able to do.
So, yes, and they can create their own adventure.
Yes.
And the positive thing about these AI is that it doesn't go too far. You can program them so they have limits. So there's certain questions, people might have noticed, that they don't answer. They don't give away where the story goes.
Yes,
or
they can't
what's
spoil
happening
things.
Next. They can't spoil things. Yeah. And it also, we don't want it to be inappropriate at all.
Yes.
That clear no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keep it fun.
Yes.
Safe.
Right. Safe.
Safe, yes. So, as the executive producer, again, when it comes to creating this series episode by episode, and how do you approach the quality control aspect of creating those episodes? Because I'm sure that it's a temptation, especially for someone with like super high standards, like we all have. We want things to be as good as they can be. How do you make sure that you're getting what you want out of it?
There's always a balance because it's a series and we don't want to let the residents wait too long for episodes. And I know for season one, that was something that there was a lot of time between episodes. That was because when we created the pilot and then the second episode and the third episode, we didn't think people would like it that much that they wanted us to continue doing this. So it was a bit of working it out on the fly. So the usual creative process where you know, okay, this is my start point, this is my end point, and here's the arc.
Yeah.
And that's where the characters are going, and you have the character Bible developed, you have a location Bible developed, and you have all these pieces in progress that you need to tell a good story. The lore behind it is worked out. We were having to do that on the go to keep delivering those episodes. And if I'm really critical, and you know storytelling and you know how a development process works, there might be points where you can see that. There might be points where you think, okay, why is this going slow? And then there's suddenly so much action. So for season two, that will be a much better season, and it's already shaping up to be that way. So I'm quite excited to get working on that and get the first episode out in August. I don't know if people got the Easter egg. So we will be releasing episodes monthly
at
a certain point.
I see.
So
certain
I'll leave
special
that
time
you.
Of month.
Yes. Yeah.
So I suppose when you started with this, like you say, you don't know how far you're going to be able to take this, like, because that's the part where it's out of your control as a production team is, okay, we want to tell this story, but we don't know how long we're going to be able to do it for. So when you started out, what was your initial thing that you started with? Did you sort of have a plan for how many episodes you were going to release first off the bat?
Yeah, so our initial plan was getting to 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And then if that went well, we would be going to 12 episodes. Now we know there is that fan base. Now we know how to grow the audience. We know a lot more about the audience. So in terms of the marketing element, we've worked that out more. Obviously, with marketing and everything that's happening, it's changing so much.
When it comes to the marketing side, and you mentioned audience data, how do you find out those things? How do you investigate that kind of stuff?
So there's third-party tools that we use that you would use for search engine optimization, for example. Then there is a lot of audience data that you can get through Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So we've started Facebook or Meta advertising, so it goes through Facebook and Instagram. So every platform has a different data point you can tap into. There's also data you can buy. You can buy audience data to give you more insights, but that's the more advanced.
Do you think that that makes a real difference when it comes to creating a series, particularly an audio drama? Like, do you see that that's really helped you kind of have foresight as to the success of the series and help you create it? I mean, as a producer, do you think that's quite an important step in the process?
Yes, it's not the first point. I'd always say the creative is the first point. The creative needs to be there because you can't market a bad product. No matter how good the audience and how great the audience is, if you have a bad product, you can't market it. So the creativity is always first.
So once you
always
have an idea.
Always comes first. But once you have an idea and you want to see is there an audience for it, then it's worth running it through and checking, is it even worth creating it? Because again, it's indie. There isn't, you know, we can't go like Universal. If it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. It doesn't really matter. We just write it off. That's not how we can work. We need to make sure that if we invest time, if we invest staff time and money to produce that show, that it's going somewhere.
Yes. I guess your challenge is balancing the risk with assurances that it's going to have some kind of return, that you're going to be able to keep doing it.
Yes.
That balance between the two. Like you said, you can't do it without the idea to start with. But I think starting out on a new project is very overwhelming when you don't have all the information as to how you're going to make it happen, which is where your expertise is making it happen.
Yeah. And that's where I'm really excited about season two, because we've made all the mistakes. Mm. Not all of them. I'm sure there's plenty of more mistakes we will make and learn from them. But we know now more of a bigger direction where this is going and can work out the art. And creatively, it's not that it becomes easier, but you're getting into a flow.
Yes.
And then it becomes, because we want this to be fun. I want the team to have fun with this as well.
And you can't do that if you focus too much on the perfectionism aspect of it, right?
That as well. And it is it is a series, but it's not a film. We don't have 2 years to develop this. Imagine every episode would be 2 years on.
Never.
The residents would not like that at all. So
yeah, they have to have some guarantee of a regularity to the show. Now that season one is complete, that sort of promise on season two and delivering in a certain time frame. What are some of the things that you want to improve on for season two then? Whether that's from the production side, you know, whether that's from the storytelling side, how are you hoping to improve when you get to season two? What are those things?
So from a production side, more regular content, put out more regular content. From a storytelling side, knowing where the arc goes, knowing where we're starting, where we're ending, the character's journey, we're working that out more and more, and then also improving the quality again. Like, we know our actors now, we know the capabilities. The world has built much more So all of this will increase the experience, will increase the quality of the show. And one thing we would like to do is to get all of our actors for one live recording into the studio. I don't know if that will happen this season, but it's definitely one of the plans that we see actors recording together more. Like Danny and Michaela have never been in one room together. Yes. And I'd really like them to get them together, because then the energy, they can bounce off differently.
Absolutely, yes. I think, personally, in my opinion anyway, that the series has done an incredible job of building relationships between the characters, building friction between the characters without them being in the same room, which is a testament, obviously, to the storytelling and the script and, of course, the talent of the actors to be able to bring that energy when you're alone in a studio with just the script in front of you and not the other actor. But it would be awesome to see them together. And I'm sure that the fans of the show, the listeners, the residents, would love to see that as well. Speaking of bringing actors together, I hear that we have a live-action episode in the works.
Well, I don't want to overpromise, because we need to be realistic here. To create a werewolf, to create the creature and film the transformation, if that is through practical effects, and then the CGI, so what goes in after in the editing, and bringing the practical effects together with the VFX, is a very costly and time-intensive process.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's balancing where we're going with this, because our main priority is to, like I said, keep the audio series running, keep the comic running, and develop this world further. I can't sacrifice that for 10 minutes of transformation scene. Mm-hmm. I would love to do it, but it is something that we need to plan very, very carefully. I can say that we are working with a special effects makeup artist, and there is plans, and we're trying out how to get Danny in a full body cast and mold her so we can create the creature. But that will be a slow process, and you might be able to follow it in stages rather than seeing the full transformation going forward.
Yes.
So this is while we're creating the podcast. We've got you as a presenter on board now to really take the fans or the residents on this journey with us. Because it's not just the audio show that's exciting. It's also, how does this come to life? How do these people from York even do this? And
absolutely,
how is that all working?
I think that's such a... I think there's so much space to learn more about how these things are created. And when you can really involve your audience in knowing how the process comes to life, as well as enjoying the story, being involved in the story, you're kind of creating this whole universe, this whole platform for this one story, which I think is really effective.
Yeah.
And again, a testament to your marketing skills to be like, let's go into all these different areas and ways that we can engage people. So does the live episode have a title? Is there anything we can share about that?
It hasn't got a title, but we have thought along the lines of potentially creating a Kickstarter for it.
Mm-hmm.
So if the fans really want to see this, then they need to help us make this work.
Yeah.
So at some point, we might do a Kickstarter campaign for it and see if we can fund it through the fan support. But for now, I think the focus is on season 2.
Yes.
On creating the behind-the-scenes content, taking everyone on this journey with us, and 1916.
Okay, what can you tell me about that?
1916 is set in the world of Davidstown, but in 1916, so pre the audio play, and it's going to be a traumatic audio book, which tells us a bit more how Tales from Davidstown even came into being and how all these supernatural characters ended up in Davidstown.
Right, so this audio book then would focus on a kind of like a prequel to Tales from Davidstown, which is set in the modern day, of course.
Yes.
Okay.
And it will run along season 2, so that the wait for these monthly episodes isn't so long. Yes. We'll give you a bit of the backstory.
Nice, nice. There's a really strong sense of world building in Tales from David's Town. And, you know, I think with the supernatural and fantasy genres, that's so important that you create a really immersive world. Again, you know, you create such an atmosphere with David's Town, which we spoke about earlier through your the sound design and the many, many sound files that you have. You've had some music in there, some composing as well, which is always so important for creating an atmosphere in an audio series.
Yeah. And that's something we want to do more work with, up-and-coming, potentially local musicians, mm-hmm. bring new talent to the show, and then cross-promote as well.
So you could be, yes, you could be bringing in local talent for stuff like that, which promotes the area that we're in making this show as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And in terms of the world building, I think that's always been the fascination with, like, big franchises. Like, if you look at Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. Tolkien created this world to play in. Star Wars.
Yes.
Same kind of thing. So Harry Potter, yeah. No matter which part of the genre you look at, that world building is always at the basis of that. And that's the beauty of it, because the underlying topics of Tales from David's Town are very human topics. Like Emily.
Emily, yes.
Emily.
Emily played by Danny, of course.
Escapes this abusive relationship,
yes.
And is looking for change and setting up a new life in the quaint town of Davidstown. And what then happens, she couldn't have foreseen or planned. So, but that's sometimes how life works. I guess we've all been in a situation where we just want to change and
yes.
kind of this escape, and then it didn't work out the way we planned, but something else happened.
Well, that's how you can find yourself listening to this audio drama and going, I relate to this character, whereas on the surface, how could you relate to a werewolf? I mean, it sounds weird, but it's not, because you're relating to the human experience of the character. And like you say, with these big franchises that we've all grown up with and we've heard of and kind of shape the genre of fantasy or sci-fi or horror and the supernatural, it's the way that these characters have very human experiences within an imagined world with creatures and magic and all of this stuff, that David's Town definitely doesn't shy away from dealing with some intense themes. Like you say, Emily's character has escaped an abusive relationship. She's dealing with panic attacks and anxiety, which really kind of, I felt when I was listening to it, that it really kind of aligns with the transformation of the beast inside,
yeah.
and the werewolf. And so how do you approach dealing with themes like that in an audio series responsibly and effectively, you know?
I think it's always making sure your actors are comfortable with it and they feel safe and supported. We send them the scripts, we ask them to give feedback. Also, if they feel uncomfortable with anything, like, the main priority is making sure the actors feel safe, feel supported, and also if they want to bring their own experiences or how they see something. We've all dealt with things like anxiety, change, not as a werewolf, we haven't literally transformed into a werewolf, but that changing, yes. that becoming a new person, I think everyone can relate to that. Or Jess, who wants to stay in control. Like, Jess is this character who very much controls her life until something happens that she might not control at some point.
Yes, and of course, then the themes of friendship, the bonds of and female friendship as well. And that ties into how this is a show about a female werewolf. And it's headed up by a very strong female cast, which is some great representation in this genre. Is it important to you, especially as a female executive producer and entrepreneur yourself, to make sure that we have that representation, tell those stories?
Definitely, because I don't think there's still not enough representation out there,
yeah.
especially in the horror community. And especially in those higher positions, like I haven't met many other female executive producers, at least not on our level.
Yeah.
And it's nice to make those decisions and make sure the women we work with are supported, especially if we're dealing with topics like abusive relationships and going into those darker places and really making sure the narrative is told from a female perspective. And yes, we have a male director, and obviously we're working with a lot of great male creatives, but even having their support for telling this female story is also a testament to how we approach the story and how we approach these themes and how supportive the creative industry and the genre can be towards women.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really important that we see that. So speaking of the stories and the casting of this show and the themes and the characters, you've got a strong female cast.
Yeah.
You've also got a strong male cast as well. I think that's a real strength of the story is, you know, you've got quite a few different characters. So you've got Jess and Emily's relationship, their friendship, which is really pivotal and important. And then you've also got actors like Johnny Vivash. I've been calling him Johnny Vivash with a voice effect. Carol's looking at me. that's my name for the character. And of course Dan as Dr. Paul. Dan has been a pretty long-standing colleague of yours as well, hasn't he?
Yes. And Dan's quite involved in the process, also behind the scenes now, because he's working with us on a more regular basis. So he's the star behind and in front of the camera or in front of the microphone.
Yes, he's wearing a few of his own hats these days as well.
Yes, definitely.
So do you think that having all of these different energies together is really what is the strength of Tales from Davidstown? You know,
we have a strong female cast, and that's very much influenced by myself and also Carl's decision, the director. We love the idea of strong female protagonists. Mm. And often in horror, you see the scream queen or the victim. And we wanted to go against that trend or go against that grain and actually have strong female characters and personalities starring in the show. But that's not to say that they are not supported by equally understanding and strong men. So we've got Johnny, we've got Dan playing these very pivotal supporting characters. Yeah. And again, this is a deeply human story, and like in life as well, it takes both. It's always about balance.
Yes. I think that's a really, really nice point, and a really, what makes the Tales from Davidstown team so strong, for sure. Did you always know that you wanted to tell a female werewolf story from the sort of birth of this idea? Was the idea of exploring the werewolf genre to go from a female standpoint to think, let's do a female werewolf?
Yes, because it's new, it's fresh. We always liked that idea.
Yeah.
And that idea of that the werewolf brings so much change and the transformation of it, and having Emily as a young woman go through that change, going from young adulthood to actually becoming an adult, taking self-responsibility, taking control of her life, telling that through the werewolf theme, we thought that was quite appealing.
Yeah, I also think that the villains you have in this story they're multifaceted as well. They're not just what's the word I'm looking for? You know, when quite one-dimensional.
Yes.
The bad and the good in this show kind of is quite mixed together a lot. And your heroes make mistakes and are not perfect. And I think that, you know, for example, the character of Emily, the character of Jess, they're not perfect.
No.
You know, they have flaws themselves. And that, as listening to it as a woman as well, that's very relatable, because they're not they're not just an idealist image
no.
of somebody, but they're someone with a real, with real life experiences and real problems as
and
well.
We want to create relatable characters. Yeah. And it's a nice point you made about the villains.
Yes.
I don't think it's very clear cut or between good and bad. Yes, there is of course there is the good and the bad and there's things you should do and you shouldn't do, but the motivation behind it, why people act in a certain way, I find that quite interesting. We're going into true crime there and thrillers.
Yes.
But it's like, what motivates those characters to act a certain way?
Is that,
and it's not that it's an excuse. It just gives depth to the story if we know, okay, would I maybe have reacted in this way? Like, if you look at the new Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix, there is moments in that film where you actually feel for him.
Yes.
Although what he does is absolutely not okay and it's horrible.
Yeah, well, I found that's what I found so impactful about that film as well, was the way that I went, wow, like, he's not just a villain in a comic here. He's someone who you could actually see how that character could come to be.
Yeah.
And in Tales from Davidstown, we have these people kind of coming out of the woodwork as we move into season two, that we're going to find out more, I suppose, about them, about their motivations and who they really are. And do we need to be careful of them? What are their motivations? And maybe they're not all bad.
We can definitely be on the edge of our seats for some of the characters and the backstories that will be revealed about them. But they're all the heroes of their own stories. And there's no... the idea of black and white, of bad and good, there's always something in between. And I think that makes a good story interesting. And that what makes Tales from Davidstown deeply human, and the story we want to tell deeply human as well.
Yeah.
And there's this idea that we have a production company overall that is genre-defying. So... good horror has also elements of fantasy, it has elements of drama, it has elements of thriller, and that's what we're trying to create.
Yes, I'm enjoying how this story is bringing in other elements to it too. I mean, you have the aspects of werewolf lore that is clearly very well researched. You've got the witch, you know, you've got Serafina and her magic involved in there. The cultural diversity of the character of Mei Ling, which brings in legends and lore that we've not heard about before. And was that also something that you knew you wanted to include before? Or was that something that when the script writing was happening, that was kind of like an idea that organically came into play? Was it inspired by the casting of Fen Fen? Or was it something you knew you wanted to have prior to?
We knew we wanted to have a really diverse cast. And we've worked with Fen Fen before, and we thought that would be a great role for her. And bringing in that rich Chinese lore, backstory, culture was something that we thought was quite appealing, also reaching a wider audience. And also the idea of the fox spirit and the Hu Li Qing.
Yeah.
Should I say Hu Li Qing?
Hu Li.
I can't really pronounce it. Also,
not good at pronouncing these things either.
Also, the idea of the fox spirit, the Hu Li Qing, probably butchering my pronunciation.
I was looking up some French the other day for some of our Instagram reels, and I was trying to get the pronunciation of a French place right.
And then you might even discover some Easter eggs, like we're talking about the Wolf of Ansbach, and there's a German voiceover character in the audio series, so I'm guessing that was a nod from production or from the creative team to me being German. So if you listen to that, you might find all these things
so
that we're talking about.
Your background is coming into this as well.
Yes, without me even knowing before I read the script.
It's a surprise for you. Must be difficult to surprise you. I mean, I can't speak for the rest of the team. But so When you were creating season one, was there any sort of moments in that process that stood out to you? What was a really memorable moment of creating the series so far? Or moments?
I think one of the moments that made me laugh and I thought, oh my God, is this what we're doing as a job is? The team was recording in the studio, and there's a little office space next to the studio, and I was taking more of a serious business call, and Dani had one of her scenes where Emily's transforming into the werewolf.
Right.
And my camera went on and the mic went on, and all the person I was talking to on this Zoom call was hearing was Dani transforming into the werewolf.
Which they don't know that's what's happening.
So yeah. I had to explain, obviously we are a production company, but that was like, okay, what is my life? What's happening here?
Why is there someone screaming in the background
at 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Call? Yes. That must have been quite interesting. Do you find that sort of thing interrupts when you're doing your business stuff? Does that interrupt things a lot when you're creating in your space?
I like it. It keeps things varied as well.
Yes.
Because a lot of the things that I do is financial forecasting and spreadsheets and marketing forecasting, and yeah, it can be quite dry. So having this creative, or doing it for a creative business, is ideal.
Yes, keeps that part of it
keeps
exciting.
Keeps it exciting and not too boring.
We've talked a lot there about the moments that we've had recording this that have stood out to you. And is there any other favourite part you have about being an executive producer for something like this?
My favourite part is combining both my strengths with the creativity and the business side of things. And I love working with the creative team. It brings me, like I said before, it brings me joy to see that I can help them bring their vision to life, and hearing that the fans, the residents love it, we're finding an audience for it. Mm. That's like the biggest reward. It's like an actor going on stage and getting applause.
Yeah, that's the thing that brings you joy in this job.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you see, going forward, how do you see Tales from Davidstown sort of fitting into the wider landscape of audio and audio drama, audio supernatural drama?
I think it will find its place. I think what we're doing is quite innovative, it's quite new, it's fresh. So there isn't any comparisons that I can draw within the audio world of things that I've heard. We have audio plays, a lot of drama, we have a lot of audio books, but something that sits within the supernatural audio play space with an accompanying graphic novel, I haven't seen this yet. So we're treading on fresh ground.
Yes, and it's doing something new here.
It's like at some point we would like to find a wider audience for it as well. So it's seeing where we go further with it. We're in talks about potentially distributing the comic wider with an independent publisher. Mm-hmm. That might be something that will be happening. Also, we want to keep content exclusive to our Patreons and our residents. But at the same time, we want to also find a wider audience. It's where do we find this wider audience? Which platforms are we onboarding to? And making those commercial decisions. But that is something. It's exciting to make a decision straight away, but I always think if you haven't found your place yet, if you don't know where you're going, there's no harm in pausing sometimes and thinking about it.
Yes, I think that's a good piece of advice, actually. I think there can be so much pressure attached to doing that. Is that a piece of advice that you would give to someone who was looking to produce an audio series themselves?
For any production, really, if it's audio, if it's film, things take time, and good things take time, and you can go fast, but you could go in a completely wrong direction. Mm-hmm. So going fast and getting things out fast doesn't necessarily mean you're going in the right direction or you're doing the right thing. So sometimes holding back and thinking about it and developing it, and like we have one of our projects for Roe, we've gone back to development again. Like we thought we were further on, but then we did something and it didn't quite work. So it's working it out and allowing yourself that create, because that's part of the creative process.
And knowing
that's what development's for.
You're going to end up with will be the product you want. And it might take more time.
Yeah.
Than, I mean, I think we just live in an age where we're churning stuff out so much. The big companies, big corporations are just churning stuff out all the time. And when you want to set out and create stuff yourself, that's going to take patience and a lot of commitment to it as well.
And you are comparing. You are comparing yourself to people.
Of course.
You know,
yeah.
you are comparing yourself to Netflix. Because you see what they're doing and that's the ultimate goal. But at the end of the day, it's you need to work within your means as a as an indie production company. And the industry is constantly changing as well. So you need to adapt with the industry.
Yeah. I think something that I really admire about you is that you have a really positive can-do attitude towards the production of this series, of any of the projects that you do and that you have done, is that it's easy to sit back and complain and be like, the industry is rubbish, everything is going down, and that can be true. But you said something the other day that I really admired, which was you were like, I don't think it's that bad. I think, well, I'll let you speak on what you said about that, but your attitude towards these sort of dips that we have.
I think in general with business, if one area goes down, another one goes up. Yeah. It's like the stock market. You'll have one stock that goes down, another one that goes up. It's just figuring out where it's going at the moment.
Yes.
And that's the tricky part.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I've always had this attitude in life that if everyone else stops, as long as you keep going, stopping isn't an option. You need to keep going. Even if you're going slow and you're going snail pace, that's better than stopping.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess in that sense, within the horror sphere, I'm quite the outsider still. Obviously, I'm an executive producer within the genre sphere. But if I look around me, I stand out. Like, I went to Fright Fest in a pink suit. So, love Barbie. And I was joking, saying I would be the Reese Witherspoon of the genre world.
Yes.
So, I might not feel the pressure that a lot of my male colleagues are feeling, that they have to perform, because I feel like with my role in the space and with what we're doing, it's fresh ground, it's so new.
Yeah, I think you bring
I have that freedom to explore. Yeah.
You're bringing that fresh perspective in through what you do. I think removing yourself from that pressure is really valuable.
Yeah.
And I think we need more of you and your pink suits at places like Fright Fest. So your ultimate goal is to be
the Reese Witherspoon of the genre world.
Of the genre
world. That was my pitch.
Yes.
I admire her, what she does with her production company, the stories she wants to tell. And I think we can do that in genre.
Yeah.
We need that in genre.
Yes, we need that mixture of being an excellent business person and having a lot of respect for the creativity. And I think those two things combined creates a lot of magic, which is what we're seeing in Tales from Davidstown. So very exciting stuff.
Definitely.
Very exciting stuff to come. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Jules. It's been super interesting to be able to chat to you about all of this.
Thanks for having me. This has been really fun.
Yeah.
And now people know who is also behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yes. And we will be seeing more of you. If you're not seeing Jules, she's there. She's just behind the scenes.
In the background.
Yeah, making sure that everything is happening. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much to all of our residents for listening to this episode of the Tales from Davidstown podcast. If you want to listen to the extended version of the podcast, you can check it out via our Patreon. You can also listen to the entirety of season one if you haven't already, and read our ongoing graphic novel series. We're very excited for the release of season two of Tales from Davidstown coming out this August, alongside our audiobook 1916, all available via Patreon. So until next time, it's goodbye from me, your host, Luella, and I'm sure I will be seeing you all very soon on Instagram, Patreon, and I look forward to chatting more things Davidstown with our guests on this podcast. So, bye everyone, see you soon.